this film we're going to talk about today is done as well as this event. So over to you guys.
Thank you, Hannah. I just wanted to say a couple of things, not anything that is going to explain the film or introduce too much of the context, but Uzma Falak is from the University of Heidelberg. She's a poet, an essayist, a filmmaker, a scholar, as Hannah said. So I'm scoring all of these things, and Uzma's been kind of saying, oh no, I'm not this, I'm not that. And I said, no, actually, all of these things, because in a way, a lot of that, in fact, can be witnessed in the film. The film is,
did everyone hear what I had to say? Yeah. The film is called Film as Witness. It's a work in progress. It's about 26 minutes long. It's, for me, a very, very interesting film because it's not a linear narrative. There's a lot of, I suppose, impressionism, if you will. And this is one of the reasons why I actually don't want to talk a lot about either the film or the context. I feel like it's a powerful film that then hopefully will evoke a lot of questions, responses, and we hope that in the discussion afterwards we can sort of work through a lot of the context and the stories and the impressions that the film can raise. I'll just say this though, it is a film about, or maybe not a film about, it's a film that addresses women in the context of one of the longest running conflicts. Kashmir is one of the most militarized zones in the world. So I think that's a really important thing to just say beforehand. And so we can talk a lot about things like memory, the interweaving of memory, justice, freedom in relation to women's lives. And I think we can talk a lot more about those things at the end of the film. But for now, you are the film's witnesses. So we'll start with that.
Okay. I'm almost feeling like we need a pause first. In a way, there's just such rich sort of interweaving of stories, impressions, poetry, and so on in the film. Just to sort of slowly start off, and then we can build up a bit of speed. First thing I'd like to say is I want this to be a lot more interactive rather than just myself trying to monopolize Uzma's time in a space where there's room for a lot of interaction. So if people want to come up a bit front, please do. So I think I'll just start off really, and I'll say something about, I just want to ask Uzma, thank you, that's a beautiful film. There's something about that, the structure of that film that allows for little details, and then you scale it up a little bit and individual stories, and then there's a scaling up and there's a kind of collective story. So there's almost like these layers, they're not necessarily, it's not a journey from the individual to the collective, it's almost like layers of impressions that build up. Would you like us to tell a little bit about your journey in that sense, at this level of the palimpsest, if you will? I will just say one thing, I hope you don't mind, Uzma, you've been saying to me that you're incapable of telling a story. So I think I'll throw that out and then ask you to respond.
I also first want to apologize about the lighting conditions. I think some images were completely bleached out and the contrast was all gone. And that's what we really care about, the image makers. But I think it's also important to bring all these limitations into the screening and into the form, actually, and have it interact with it. I do feel that I've been telling Goldie this, we've been having conversations about these different kinds of storytelling forms. And I've been telling Goldie that I feel that I'm not capable of, it feels like I'm not capable of telling a story. But I guess what I really mean,
I'm so sorry, can someone help? I just need to put, this is my screensaver.
So I think I like to tell stories in a much more fragmentary form. I like to inverse these notions of linearity and homogeneity regarding storytelling and regarding the idea of time, which is actually a important constituent of film form. Film is also about time. It's about the timeline. It's about the temporality. And of course, the film, a lot of images in the film are images that I have been sort of obsessed with as I grew up in Kashmir. And of course, a lot of these images are also, they draw from my poetry, like this image of the spinning wheel or other kinds of images of the water and close-ups of this, you know, the water as and there are different interpretations to it, like the water as time in itself. And so I think the film form allows me to work with those images and yet bring all these different narratives of the women together. In the initial sequence, there were these images of broken homes and the women were talking to these images. It was as if each woman was talking about her own memory of the door and the window. There were like these similar narratives, our homes were broken and the window was broken there, or they took our screwdrivers and they searched the houses. And so there is this one overarching narrative of how home, which is supposed or which is thought of or conceived of as a safe space, like home as a safe space, is completely ruptured in the context of Kashmir, in the context of a military occupation. And this boundary between the public and the private, the home and the street, they crumble. And so I work with these ideas, and also like then the idea of a window, which I also explore in the film through the poetry and also through images, this window almost becomes a border between the home and the street. And the window allows for witnessing. And there are a lot of pictures from Kashmir. If you look up the web, you'll see a lot of women standing in the window, at the windows, and watching the funerals or watching an army guy, I suppose, beat a person or somebody. Like, everybody feels the urgency, if I must use this word, an urgency to witness. Because, of course, there is an erasure in place, and it's institutionalized. There is a forgetting in place, which is institutionalized. And people respond to these erasures. But I never wanted this film to be about, like, I never wanted it to be a story about few women and let them draw the film. I rather wanted it to be like a fragmentary experience of different women and their stories. And I wanted to rob myself of that vantage of telling a story. And I explore my own subjectivity, of course, through the camera and the images, but also through my own poetry. And I think I had long debates about, should I have my voice in there? Should I not? Should I use my words in there? Like, so initially I had my voice in there, but every time I screened that version, I would always be like really unsettled for some reason. And then I decided to have the images that I've been thinking through over these years, and to have the poetry superimposed on these images. So in a way, the film form allows, like, it creates a space of resonance where women's narratives come together. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the same thing, but it allows for a certain intersubjectivity and that's the binding of personal and collective.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that phrase, a space of resonance, but you also do something with it that's jarring at points in the film. And I'm just going to point to the very famous sequence in the Bollywood film from the 1960s called Kashmir Ki Kali, And Kashmir ki kali, for those who are not familiar with it, it means like the bud from Kashmir. And you have a very famous actress, Sharmila Tagore, who's playing the very innocent, sort of beautiful, virginal Kashmir beauty. So that whole exoticization of Kashmir in a Bollywood film. But you do something so wonderful with it. So the whole song, the images from that song, where Shammi Kapoor, the sort of Elvis, I would hate to say Elvis-like character of Bollywood, but there's a lot of the head twisting and turning is a bit like that. And he's singing a love song, like You're Like the Spring, or you know, those sorts of things. But what you've interspersed there is the song of from Kashmiri, A Chance of Freedom. So that jarring, I think what... I suppose I'm not even sure that I have a question as such, but perhaps you can say something about that.
I mean, of course, if you look at the documentary form, the earlier notions of the documentary form as being, or camera as being this objective device which can capture the objective truth, were completely trashed later by obviously not only the filmmakers, but also by the documentary theorists. And everything, of course, that we do is performative. And the film form is also performative. It's not an objective medium. It's not a passive medium. It has its own grammar and language. And it's its own, I mean, it has its own grammar and own texture. I wanted to, of course, work with those ideas of exploring the subjectivity. But I also actually wanted to bring this idea of the performative to the foreground. And I wanted to accentuate that idea of the performative. And it's almost like an intervention in the film. And of course, like this Bollywood sequence is not choreographed to this song. It's choreographed to Chansa Roshan Chehra. I mean, that's the song. And of course, the background to that is that Bollywood, which is the official cultural, India's official cultural producer, has always looked at Kashmir either as this beautiful paradisical landscape or of course like those notions of Jawan and external threat and cine patriotism, a lot of films work with those ideas as well. So I wanted to work with those notions and particularly, Kashmir ki Kali means the flower of Kashmir, but it's actually a reference to the Kashmiri women as being beautiful. So this is also like not only the exoticization of a landscape, but also exoticization of its people. And by extension, it is like masking people's stories by saying that Kashmir is beautiful and a paradise. And everything is normal, and everything is peaceful. The state masks and kind of takes away the stories of loss and pain and resistance that Kashmir kind of is about. So that was the idea, to have Shammi Kapoor, and also not to dismiss the official narratives. I mean, not to abandon official narratives, but I rather like to use them to explore their subversive possibilities. And that's why the quote by Jawaharlal Nehru, who also uses this trope of Kashmir being this feminine beauty, so Kashmir being this woman, and what does it mean in the larger sense? So it allows, this form allows for me to use these official narratives and to create these possibilities of subversion.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually thinking maybe you have better questions than me, so maybe I'll invite the audience to, you know, if you have questions, please ask. And if I also think of a brilliant one, I will jump in between. So, there's a question.
Hi, thank you very much, beautiful film. I was wondering if you know any of these women, or if you know them personally, I mean, and how you work with them, and whether you had to build trust, because I know that especially in small areas, people don't necessarily want to talk, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know these women, they are friends, like, I've known them, I mean, since many years, like, and the film didn't actually start there, it was in the middle, like, of me knowing them that I started the process of filmmaking. But actually in Kashmir, people are, like I said, there is an urgency to witness. So there's also this thing of people telling their stories, and they are very forthcoming in that. And it's a conscious decision where people are like more than... So I don't think so that the traditional trust... I mean, of course, you have to build that trust and I mean, it's a... So I forged these bonds over a long time with these women that I work with. And so for me, obviously it was a very, very, it was a slow process. And the film is still a work in progress, like I keep saying all the time. So, but it also became a way because I was separated, I mean, I was born in 89. And that's when the Assam struggle for liberation from India's rule started in the, broke out in the region. It became also a way of listening to their stories and informing me about what was there. It became a way of transference of knowledge, if you will, or transference of historical narratives. So I would also like, you know, these women who talk in the beginning would often tell me, oh, you must not have been even born. So it became a way of history telling and them as mediators of history and then a way of, like a continuum. You know, from, like I said, I see myself part of the film. I am a woman from Kashmir, and this is a film on Kashmiri women. So I'm very much part of this whole thing. And that's why I said in the beginning that I wanted to rob myself of that vantage of telling a story and basically have my narratives interspersed in the film. And I don't know if that answers the question, but...
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a question. Yes.
Hi, thank you. You've spoken quite a lot about the story and you've spoken about the people that you filmed and how you fit your story in that film. I'm just wondering if you could speak a bit about your objective and whether you contemplated the audience at any point on this journey.
I didn't get the first part, sorry, I think.
I guess my question is whether, as part of your prep for this, you've focused at all on the audience and your objective, who you wanted to reach with this film, mm-hmm. who you imagined watching the film.
Yeah, that's like... always a tricky question, but of course with the Bollywood and with certain sequences, it was speaking to an Indian audience. Because a lot, I mean, I studied in Delhi. Since 2012, I was in Delhi, and a lot of people actually didn't know about, I mean, we would talk about, say, the mass rape of Kunan Poshpura, which happened in the 90s, or we would talk about the stories of torture or killings. The people wouldn't, they said that we don't know that this exists. I mean, of course, there are two narratives. There are people who consciously don't want to know what happens, and there are people who actually don't know, because, like I said, there's an erasure. There is a very, very intense information control that India has imposed, not only in the context of Kashmir, but other kinds of other regions as well, but dominantly so in Kashmir. So, and this question that where are you from often became the most difficult question. Okay, you're from Kashmir, and the next question would be, is everything normal there now? And the next question would be, so it would lead to a series of questions, and then of course the responses would sometimes surprise them, sometimes outrage them. And so there was a diverse kind of responses. And actually, this idea of Kashmir ki kali is actually, it dates back to my time in Delhi. People would that would be the first reaction. Oh, you're from Kashmir, so you're the Kashmir ki Kali, you know, like, and that kind of, you know, it kind of gets at you, like, at some point. So I think those were the threads that I was working with, but definitely it's not only for that audience. It's also primarily for the people of Kashmir, for these women, for my own self, for my own self. I mean, like I said, it's a space that creates a certain resonance, and to have these women in the film talking, but also talking to each other through their memories and through their memory practices is how I mean, honestly, I don't think so. I mean, I've really thought about the audience while I was working. I mean, of course, with the Bollywood and the several registers that it has, it might look like, okay, it's directed to a certain target audience, but that was not the idea that I had in mind, or I usually don't have that idea when I work with a lot of things. Yeah.
Okay, Kath, and then Sunita, yeah. And then one more.
Thank you. That was a really powerful film. Thank you very much. My question follows on from that one in a way, which is the role of witness and what is distinctive about a witness as opposed to a viewer or a spectator. Is there a kind of moral implication of witnessing and of others as a witness?
Yeah. I think for me, not only the film form, but the different kinds of expressions that I've used or the people have used to tell their stories, and specifically I'll speak for myself. The film allows, this film, and that was the idea that I worked with in the beginning, allows for a three-layered witnessing. One, I, myself, as a filmmaker, being a witness to the stories of the women that I worked with in the film. The second, I being a witness to my own stories and my own growing up in Kashmir. Like, for example, in the poem, I talk about my grandmother's house, which was burned down when I was in grade 7. And I wasn't allowed to go to the site of the burning. Probably my parents thought that it would be too upsetting for me as a child to see that. I don't know what was the idea. But it was a very significant event in my memory. Like, I, not being able to go there and probably not being able to mourn that. I mean, I was quite attached to my grandmother's space and to that whole. That kind of, I think I carried that idea through my life as I grew up. And that's probably the reason that I had these montages of the broken homes and the destroyed homes in the film. And in my other works also, I happened to, my idea of time is totally vague and messed up, but I think in 2012, I actually went to an abandoned torture home, like an army camp, but a torture home which was abandoned later. And it was now going to be destroyed, or a mall or a hospital was going to be built at that site. So I went there, and I think the initial drive was this idea of being able to mourn. I think there's also that the state also tries to clamp down. I mean, there is also a crackdown on mourning itself. I mean, this is not only metaphorically, actually government forces do fire at the funerals, which then transform into demonstrations, and demonstrations transform into funerals. So there's like this
cycle.
Yeah, this cycle. So a witness to the stories of women, a witness to my own self, like my own stories, and the witnessing the process of witnessing, which is the process of film form. And I try to bring that to the foreground by consciously foregrounding the idea of performance, like the idea of interventions, for example, this Shami Kapoor bit, which doesn't exist, but it's like an intervention. Mm-hmm. And witnessing is different, of course, from viewing, because it does have an ethical, it does have that connotation. Like, for example, if you noticed, there are two dream narrations in the film. The women, Parveena talks about her dream. Parveena's son was subjected to enforced disappearance. And she talks about the only dream she has had of her son, who tells her that, you know, I'm alive and the army has hidden me. And they tell me that your mother is looking for you and only your mother. So that's one dream. And the second dream is of Sakina, who talks about her brother, who was actually 14 years old when he was first picked up, and he was booked under the Public Safety Act, which the Supreme Court of India, has called it as a draconian law, but it does exist in Kashmir, so where you can be booked for 2 years without any trial or access to any judicial aid. So she talks about her brother, and her brother tells her that, you know, I will be free, and there's a dialogue. So Walter Benjamin reminds us that dreams have a share in history. And there are theorists who have worked on this idea of dream as being, I mean, these visitational dreams as binding us in an ethical responsibility. When Parveena's son tells her that, mother, I'm alive, it's only a dream, but it binds her in sort of a, you know, like an ethical, or when Sakina's brother talks to her in the dream. So I wanted to work with these, also with these everyday practices, with these everyday memory practices, as opposed, I mean, that was one other idea, one another thread, that I wanted to dislodge the centrality of the written word where history is concerned, or where knowledge production is concerned, where the statist knowledge production is concerned, or the statist temporalities, you know. The official time, which is future looking, bright, shining India, world leader, you know, like a neoliberal official time, forward looking. But what happens to people's time, people's temporalities? Like, these two temporalities are always in friction. And that I feel for myself as a person, like, I feel that the world is moving faster, and it's, the time is accelerated, and any kind of loss, and of course now, everywhere in the world, like, cities are being bombed, children are being killed. What kind of temporality do they inhabit? So I feel that the loss, any kind of loss, slows down time, but the outward time, of course, because of capitalism and globalization and neoliberalism, and of course, other kinds of military interventions everywhere, these have kind of accelerated time, and there is a friction between these two temporalities. And that is the crisis that I find myself amidst, and that is a sort of idea that I like to work with through the film. So, and witnessing is also about that moment, that time, and that urgency to witness, because there is erasure, because there is erasure which is institutionalized, like I said earlier, and this is not only in a metaphoric sense. I mean, the smallest thing, there are graffiti in Kashmir all over, for example, go India, go back. The army actually paints them back, like, go India, go became good India, good. And this is a very small example, but there is a whole, I mean, this erasure is quite intense. And it's not only like a gun holding soldier on the street, but it's also like a war on our resources, on the bodies, on the thoughts, on, it's like a multidimensional war, if you will. It's a cultural war. So that's why witnessing in places like this becomes, in places like Kashmir, becomes very important. I mean, forgetting is a luxury, right? I mean, it's like a luxury that probably, forgetting allows for healing, true, but it's also a luxury that probably occupied people cannot afford.
Yeah. That's really powerful. I mean, I also wanted to say, I mean, I'll probably reserve a little bit of that, my comment in relation to what you've just said, for a little later, because I just wanted to say this, you cannot avoid witnessing, you just cannot avoid witnessing, like, whether you want to or not, there's a forcibility to it almost, but I'll maybe comment on it a bit later. And I think Sunita had a question, and then after. Yeah. And there's a mic.
Oh, I had a two-part question for you. I so enjoyed the, thank you very much. I wanted to ask you about the risks of being a storyteller, and because that's, I suppose, related to witnessing. And you, I felt in this, I've forgotten the epigraph, at the beginning of the film, there was a quote from a 14th century poet about, I went looking for myself and I became weary. I wore myself out. It was very moving, and your comments throughout and the way the poetry was overlaying the images, which it felt like there was this search for the self. You mentioned that as part of the way in which the structure of the film unfolds. What risks are there for you as a storyteller, and both modes of storytelling, as a poet and a filmmaker?
What risks?
Yes, what risks do you encounter both while doing it? I mean, and then obviously the aftermath of creating and exhibiting.
First, I'll just respond to the quote that you pointed out. It's from Laldev. I wore myself out as I look for myself. And it's about the idea of self, of course. And that is what... it's connected to the idea of self-determination that Kashmir is asking for. And the film is called Till Then the Roads Carry Her. So it's also like... there's this idea of a journey. The journey not only to freedom, but also, of course, in the film as such. And of course, this idea of journey and Till Then the Roads Carry Her, and I wore myself out as I was looking for myself, is also connected to, of course, what I said earlier about the homes and the streets, the border between them crumbling. And like the women in the film said, that we would not enter our homes, we would just be on the streets, lying there, we would just eat there and sleep there and cook there. And so it was also, and this idea that, and that, I mean, Parveena ji, who's in the film, she keeps often saying that we'll not tire, we'll keep looking, and we'll keep walking. That's the motive that she always uses, that we'll keep walking. Mm. And I wanted to, because walking is not a very simple act in Kashmir. Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, and it's not only me, but I mean, there were like military installations everywhere. So as simple as an act of walking the city, walking from home to school, became like an act of some act of resistance, because you would have to pass all these military bunkers, and sometimes they would giggle, sometimes they would whistle at you, or sometimes, of course, your bags would be checked. I remember there was a bomb blast outside my school when I was in class 10th, and I was walking home, and this trooper, he searched my friend's lunchbox, and I just snapped at him, and I thought that I had done something really heroic, that I talked back to him. But my mother was really scared, and she was like, you know, you shouldn't have done that. So the act of walking in itself becomes resistance, becomes quite challenging. So that's about the walking and the journey. The risks, of course, like there is a very direct state clamp down, like there is censorship, and that is a reality in Kashmir. I mean, and it's not only, it's now also like a multi, like I said, it's a multi-dimensional war, and the censorship is also, I mean, last year, people who posted on Kashmir and posted videos, Facebook accounts were blocked, and it's Facebook taking these accounts down. So you can imagine the kind of alliance that exists.
In fact, there was a person that was arrested for sedition because of a Facebook post.
Yeah. So there have been arrests on something like a Facebook post. There have been, accounts have been blocked. Of course, there was a musician whose studio was raided when he tried to rap on Kashmir in 2010. And all sorts of, I think we've normalized it so much, like these kind of risks and probably erasure and that it becomes invisible. But you're right, there were a lot of things. I mean, when I was filming, and I had a friend who had long hair, and we had this huge tripod with us, and we were carrying it. A lot of people would tell us, like, you know, don't walk like this, and he might be, because there was actually in one of my friends' father was shot at by the troopers as he was an engineer, and he was carrying his equipment on the shoulders, and there was a sniper, and they shot at him. This is only like a minuscule, I mean, like just carrying tripods like that, or trying to film army establishments. There have been instances where people have been asked to delete footage, and that's an everyday practice, for example, in the protests or other kind of places where journalists and reporters have been beaten, have been arrested, their footage has been taken away. So of course there are all those risks that one, but I think on another level, it's, of course, telling a story is healing and cathartic, but it's also the burden of telling and retelling and the fatigue of it. And of course it's urgent, it's important, and people do it, but it's also that idea that nothing happens, but people continue to, for example, the mass rape survivors of Kunan Poshpura have been telling their stories and narrating their testimonies over a period. It's been, I think, more than
30 years.
30 years. And journalists and writers and artists and academics have gone there. I mean, but I'm trying to understand that what does it mean, really? I mean, with the army saying that, with the army actually saying that these are recorded rotten stereo sounds that play rape all over again. This is what the state had to say to these, to in response to these testimonies. So I think that's another kind of burden, like this telling and retelling, and what does it mean, and how does it punctuate the everyday, and what does it mean at large?
I think there was a question. I mean, do we have time just for one or two questions?
Yeah, maybe two more.
Yeah, just.
Hi, thank you for the film, but also thank you everyone for the questions, because this one is sort of leading on from all of them. And so I guess this is partly coming because there were chants in the film. But there were also bits from Roli Mukherjee's artwork.
Oh, yeah.
And I was trying to make sense of how you sort of conceive film as a space where there is so much, like you said, it's witnessing of acts of witnessing, and how you sort of conceive film as a space where maybe a lot of different kinds of art that is being produced, and a lot of different kinds of witnessing that is being produced, or acts of looking back and sort of history telling, like one sees in now musicians who are singing poetry that is maybe 2 to 3 to 5 centuries back, and just sort of how you make sense of film as that space where so many different kinds of modalities can be brought forth.
Yeah.
But also just, I was wondering if you could talk about how you see the exhibition of the film as the space. Like, is this a film that you can take back to a public site in Kashmir? And how you conceive just, the exhibition space.
Should I take both questions too? Oh, okay. I'll respond.
Do you want to ask a question as well, and then Usma can?
Oh, no, maybe no. I can first.
Oh, yes,
I
first
thought you wanted to
no,
say
no,
something.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are different kinds of materials that I work with in the film. The idea is, in the long term, because this is also a work in progress, like to have these different kinds of materials take a life of their own in the film. So one, of course, is the personal memories of the women. The second is the poetry. The third is the women's songs, the everyday women's songs that I'm now working on in my PhD. these songs of the everyday, which work with really ordinary details but inscribe loss in the ordinary. So there are the songs. Then there are these photographs, which were rescued from probably a burning home. I mean, these photographs also, they are from the 90s. They kind of are a witness to that time. So there are photographs. There is Roli Mukherjee's work, which responds also to women's stories and also to APDP and other kinds of other stories. And there is also, and of course, there is then the filming process. So for me, the film becomes a space, like I said, residence not only of the stories, but also different kinds, different forms, different materials of storytelling. And it's also about like the cut, where you make the cut in the sequence, which becomes critical. It's the image A and image B, but also the in-between. Also the cut, also where you make the cut, where you decide to make the cut and join. So one image has something to say, the second image has something to say, but when we view them together, they create something else, like they create a third nameless in between, like a liminal, like some other material which is not in the film, some other absent material. And this is the idea that, I mean, when I earlier talked about time and temporality, and I said that, you know, like these kinds of works or there is a status temporality and a status homogeneity, and of course, which is characterized by a certain presence. But this kind of material is kind of, it haunts that presence. Mm. So these cuts haunt what is present in the film. And for example, while there is a war on the bodies in Kashmir in terms of arrest or torture or disappearance, it's a body, right? But in Kashmir, like, when people come together, for example, for a protest rally or for a funeral, it's the in-betweenness which engender like a haunting affectivity which exists then in between the people. I mean, I'm actually quite, I love that space where the space of solidarity where people come together but also create something in between, like really between bodies. So it is this in-betweenness which for me creates a certain timelessness. Like it's beyond these normative notions of temporality. And this is not, like I said, this is not only in the abstract sense, but what does it mean for Parveena to talk about her disappeared son, who is not dead, who is not living, but who exists somewhere in between? Like, that's also a certain liminal, a certain in-betweenness there of the living and the dead. So, and this in-betweenness of the bodies then translates into the in-betweenness that exists in the film with the cut. So that for me becomes a critical idea to work with when I kind of look at these ideas that I have and then translate them into the film form. So that's one thing, but of course there's a whole other things like...
I feel like there's a lot of that all the way through the film. You have a wedding and they're singing about the martyr, the blood-soaked clothes, and then you've got a bride wearing red.
Yeah.
And it's like this, the haunting of the father and the daughter. But it's made present by the women through their singing as a wedding song.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing moment.
Yeah, so the celebration becomes mourning. And for example, when APDP meets in the park, I had these images of women hugging and kissing repeatedly. And that is supposed to be a space of mourning, but it becomes a space of celebration, of, I would not use the word sisterhood, but I have an alternate term from Kashmir, which is veston, which means friendships, but it's not, I mean, of course, in feminist scholarship, the notion of sisterhood also then goes back to the idea of a common mother, blood, like sisterhood, but then it's also not critical because it's homogeneous. But this idea of Weston is, I feel, much more critical as a term to use. So the space of mourning allows that space, that APDP protest space becomes a space where women meet and greet and talk about like really everyday details about what did you cook last night and where did you go. And but it is a space where they're actually demanding the whereabouts of their disappeared sons or husbands or brothers. So there are always these transactions and translations between the living and the dead, mourning and and celebration, and the other different kinds of translations.
Suvir has, is that Sadhvi you also, or Sadhvi maybe first and then Suvir?
I have a very long
letter,
so that's a very good question.
Oh my God, so quick. Look at my notepad, it's full. Irshad first. What a beautiful movie. Affecting beyond intelligence. I think that's really what it is. It goes beyond the mastery of what narrative does, what it takes away. And I think what you've done is really you work in the crevices of memorialization. You know, I think that's really...
That's beautiful.
That's, for me, that was a very rich experience. And what I wanted to talk to you actually was about this neoliberal condition of anxiety. Because in the editing, the subversive editing of the movie, I felt a slow anxiety. I actually also felt like, oh God, it's going to end. Oh no, it's going to end. Ah. And I was wondering, I hope the 26 minutes aren't up already, right? That we've been told before about how long the movie is. And thinking about anxiety in the context of Kashmir, in the context also of... how it would be translated in language, ghabraat, maybe? I don't know. And how does anxiety feature? Because it featured for me in the film, but what does it feature in terms of your storytelling, if at all, I suppose is my question.
Okay, I'm actually going to ask Sue.
Yeah, I'll talk to Usman.
Are you sure?
No, we can have both questions and...
Yeah. Please, I think we're wanting to do justice to the question also.
Very quickly then, this is not simply an ethical act of witnessing. This is clearly meant to be a political film. You've made it for all the right reasons, which is you want to move audiences into some form of not simply empathetic identification, but political. Now, this, and you know that I'm completely sympathetic to this project, but for me, for a lot of audiences, including the Indian audiences you have in mind, there isn't enough detail here to be able to inform audiences. We all know that Kashmir is a festering sore, but that's not a political understanding. So I'm heartened by the fact that you say that you're going to keep working on this. And this for me in my writing and you in your filmmaking and other activities continues to be a major problem. What information can we interlace with these more expressionistic features of narrative in order to be able to carry audiences with you?
Okay. Anxiety. I feel like actually in Kashmir the state is anxious. I mean, of course, there's people's anxiety, which is different. I mean, a lot of people objected to it when I said, I mean, I was working on something and I would say that I think the Indian state is anxious. And a lot of people would say, but no, it's not. But
paranoid.
If you look,
paranoid.
But it is. And tapping into that, I mean, strategically tapping into that, I think there are these possibilities of resistance that people, I mean, of course, people are also anxious of erasure or other kinds of, I mean, on an everyday basis, people are killed in Kashmir. There are stories of, like I said, torture and disappearances and rapes, and people have to deal with this on an everyday basis. And of course, now, because it happens every day, or the number is so huge, we keep looking at the numbers, but it's also like that every day, what does it mean for an individual really to live with that kind of a, that kind of a loss? Or for me, I think I have had a very difficult time in conceiving the time of the film. It's just 26 minute, it's a 26 minute film, but like I said, it's a work in progress, and I actually have a much longer time in my mind, but then I also don't know where to, I mean, that's some, it was initially a much shorter film, now it's a 26 minute film. I don't know what will, but it's also incomplete, and I think it, for me, for any work, yes, but I think also for a film like this, or for films, or works from Kashmir cannot be complete, I guess. There is that incompleteness probably we'll have to live with, or we have to kind of find a way to build it into the works in itself and talk about that incompleteness. So I don't know how to respond to that question, because it's just like, yeah, I mean, so I've been kind of struggling with particularly the time of the film and what you experience, like this. And for me, I think different viewings, sometimes I feel that, oh, it's too fast, and sometimes I feel like it's too slow. So it's also like I have to think more about and find a way to deal with this. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the question on, sorry, now I'm totally in
the
thinking
political
about
film as a narrative. That would you be interlacing more a political point?
But I.
Well, the film is a political film.
Yeah,
it is a
that's
political
what I
film.
Mean.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
suggesting for a second it's not. But its politics have to be, in some ways, made more legible
yeah.
for audiences who are not already seated.
Yeah, I think that's a good. I mean, there's always this thing: where do you start? Each work, where do we start? Like, one thing in the film was like, should I actually give the context? And but then the question is, it's really a source of crisis. Where does one begin? How far can? Yeah. How do we explore that in any kind of work? Like, be it writing or be it the film. Like, how? There are other kinds of films, for example. For example, there's, I don't know if you've seen Tushar's film on the music of Kashmir, which came out recently. What's it called? Soz. It's called Soz, and it kind of explores different art expressions in Kashmir. And what he's done, he's an Indian filmmaker, and what he's done, it's a very powerful film. And what he's done is, there's a historian in Kashmir, Zarif Ahmed Zarif, and he kind of intersperses his history narration into what exists there. But that's one kind of approach to the film. And of course, it was strategic for them, because I did speak to them, I mean, as filmmakers, like as an Indian audience, they were particularly making it for an Indian audience. I mean, like I said in the beginning, I don't really know who this film is for, and I really don't like to work with those kind of constraints. So and of course, certain sequences will reference certain, will automatically kind of be conceived of as directed towards certain people, but it's not. So there's always a struggle that where does one, how much of a context, because it's also continuing. It's, we are memorializing a war which is ongoing. So that's also one, once, I don't really know, like, how much do we put in and how much.
Yeah,
but also there is the technique. I have used a different kind of approach, primarily because I wanted these kind of practices, which are like these everyday practices, to speak to this notion, to articulate what we know exists, but what you said, we have to find more ways of, probably more legible ways of speaking. But I feel, for example, these songs, the Azadi song, is the most, it's a cliche, like hum kya chahte, I mean, it's a cliche that, it's the most loud and clear cliche that one can have, like hum kya chahte azadi, we want freedom. And of course, there are these stories of personal loss, but also these women who have not probably suffered a personal loss in terms of not lost a son or nobody's disappeared in the family, like the women in the beginning. Mm. To have also then their narratives in the film also becomes... So I wanted these everyday practices that exist in Kashmir to foreground these practices and let them speak what exists, like let them be the context that they are. I mean, as opposed to like
the official history.
No, also
the voice.
Written, also yeah. all, also yeah. other kinds of. History writings and
I think there's a remarkable, there's one image in the film that's absolutely stunning. It's the wheel and then you've got memory is a survivor. Is a survivor, not a victim? Is that the line?
Yeah.
And there's a whole series of your poem that comes up. And the wheel is a spinning wheel, so it looks like it's going forward, but it's going backward. So I feel like every time I see that, I feel like my stomach is churning because I don't know whether it's going backward or forward, but it feels like it's doing both at the same time. And then you've got the memory. So memory as in the memories, but it's the memory of the present, and it's also like the future, really. It's almost like it speaks to this time that cannot be boxed into past, present, future. And I feel like that says something and speaks to something around memorializing, but also the little details. It's a spinning wheel, there's a fragment of glass, there's a ripple in the water, you know, all of these. And you do that beautifully, you let these things speak. But it's almost like you don't want them to be subsumed into one voice, even though the song, the very clear clarion call of freedom, is there all throughout. So I don't know if that's kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the idea I generally work with. I'm working on these songs, so I'm also trying to challenge the idea of history writing in itself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thread that I have in mind. And like these... Like you said about the past, present, and the future, and these temporalities, this is not only happening in abstract forms. Like it might sound, okay, all these fancy constructs and all these abstract forms, but it does articulate in the everyday through these practices and through women's stories. And
absolutely. I think we have run out of time, but it was an absolutely beautiful film.
Thank you so much. Thank
you all
for
coming. Thank you as well. I have to say, this is one of the most enjoyable audience questions that
I've
experienced.
Like
so thank you so much. And please join us for Uzmal and myself at our Limousines Kar Khan or Memory Workspace. There are different times that it's on. And also Saturday evening.